Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
It looked as though it would never happen.
Tunate Cakir is listening to Massimiliano Irrati and it's been disallowed.
Pain, heartbreak, disappointment.
Anthony Lopez gets a hold of the ball and that is going to be enough to get Leon over the finish line. It's the full-time whistle.
Season after season.
The full-time whistle. Chelsea have won the Champions League.
Year after year. And then
Bernardo Silva, tight angle, pulls it back, coming onto it now to shoot. Yeah! Score! Rodri! Manchester City lead in the Champions League final.
The third trophy in a treble.
And they've done it! They've done it! Manchester City have done it!
And a first Champions League title.
Rodri with the goal. Edison with two outstanding moments. And Pep Guardiola is a European champion again.
Time to do it all again.
This is Blue Moon. It's the original fan-made Manchester City podcast. Coming up, we've got news and views from City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
They always say don't judge a book by its cover. Well, don't judge a football season by its first 7 months. None of us, or very few of us at least, expected that Manchester City would go on to achieve what they did last May. So those are perhaps words to keep in mind as we head into the new campaign. Has the transfer window gone as well as you'd have hoped so far? Does it seem like the preparations for the coming season have been as good as they could be? Maybe yes, maybe no. Either way, let's not be so quick to judge. We'll be reviewing everything that's happened on the tour on today's Blue Moon podcast and gearing up for this weekend's Community Shield. We'll also be discussing how Pep Guardiola keeps his players hungry after everything they've achieved. The Athletic's Sam Lee has been speaking to the players during pre-season to find out. We'll also hear from the 1894 group and the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group about this weekend's boycott of the trip to Wembley later in the show. So let's get to it. I'm David Mooney and back for the first episode of our 15th season. We've got City fan Chris Higginbottom.
Hello.
And One Football's Dan Burke.
Hello David, great to be back.
Good to be back. Good summer.
I mean, weather-wise, it's not been much of a summer, but yeah, it's been a nice little break from the football, but I'm raring to go again now, certainly.
Good. Chris, how's your summer been? It's I guess it's easy when you've just won a treble.
Yeah, I felt a bit weird, a bit like a hangover after like a massive party. and then you sort of blearily looking around and people have left, like Gundogan and people like that.
Yeah.
Like, we're never going to see them again. Hang on a minute, he's took the vase, but yeah. No, it's been a bit weird. It's been a bit surreal. And 15th season of the podcast.
Yeah,
so that was since 2008 when we were formed.
Yeah, yeah, not quite 2009. I jumped on the bandwagon.
Oh, all right, fair
yeah.
enough.
but yeah, it's been going on for a while. It's weird because. You know what, Dan? I don't know if I expected I would have a summer where City had won pretty much everything when I started the podcast, even though like we knew the takeover had happened and we knew that they were starting to make serious investment. I still think City have managed to surpass my expectations. Does that make sense?
I suppose so, yeah. I mean, you say pretty much everything. We haven't won everything, though, have we? That's the thing. That's the challenge now, to come back and try and win it all, try and win the quadruple plus maybe this season. But
like
yeah, I know
new game
you mean.
Plus on a video game when you start with all what you've so like we only have to win the League Cup this season, then we've kept everything from last year.
Well, I think Liverpool tried to pull that one, didn't they? When they they won the Premier League title and then the following season they won a few more trophies and tried to sort of group them all in together. Like, no, it doesn't work like that, lads. It's a completely different season. But yeah, I know what you mean. Like, the treble was something that I never expected I would see as a City fan, and something that I haven't really expected to see even in this glorious new era where we've spent lots of money and had all these brilliant players. it still felt like the crowning achievement of everything, really. So, you know, I've been in this kind of like weird sort of fugue state since the end of last season, where I was just sort of basking in the glory of the treble for so long that I almost wasn't able to snap myself out of it, and haven't been able to snap myself out of it. And I'm wondering when I'm going to snap out of it. Is it going to take a defeat to kind of hammer it home, bring me back down to earth or something like that? Or will I be kicking every ball when the Community Shield kicks off this weekend? It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. Has it changed things for you, Chris? Has it changed kind of how you feel about City and football, in that you've now seen, like, I know we're making light of grouping all the trophies together, but you've now seen City lift every single major trophy that they can lift?
Well, I suppose there is a danger of that sort of completed it, mate, mentality. It's like, well, I'll go and follow somebody else now, shall I? Or pick a different sport. But no, it's not that at all. I am raring to go. The same as if we'd got relegated and we were absolutely terrible, I wouldn't be thinking of anything other than, you know, picking the baton back up and going at it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's start with a couple of questions from Twitter, or X as it's now known. George says, how are the expectations going into the new season, knowing that we possibly just had the best ever season? And are you as excited as you were for the previous season? In what ways could this season top the last? Along the same lines, Mike says, following a very successful season, what should our expectation levels be for a successful season this time around? What should we expect from Haaland, given his individual achievement last season as well? And I'm kind of interested in where you two have set your expectation levels for this year. Chris, what are you hoping for? What are you hoping to see?
Stay in the league. Well, you laugh, but you don't know what's around the corner with all these allegations. Mind you, that'll take a few years, won't it? But no, in all seriousness, I want us to win the league. That's always my priority, because there's certain clubs that we're still clawing away at in terms of playing catch up. So that's my number one priority. Literally anything else is a bonus, really. I mean, even if we don't win the league, it's not necessarily like, if we don't win the league and win some other trophies, that's all right. But what I want is the league again. If we win the Champions League again, great. But as I say every season, it's all about the league for me, because that's the true test of a squad.
Yeah, and Dan, does it change things that no team has ever won the English top flight four times in a row, and City have the chance?
I mean, imagine the head loss if we do that. It's going to be off the scale, isn't it?
Especially with no signings or two signings.
Yeah. I mean, I'm the same as Chris. You know, the Premier League is the bread and butter. It's the one I always want to go for. It's the one that defines whether City have had a good season or not for me. And I think, you know, I could even imagine a situation one day where we win the Champions League and nothing else, and you say, yeah, but it wasn't actually a great season, was it? You know, we've not won the league title. We weren't the best team in our own league. So, you know, you can't really consider it an ideal season there. Having said that, you know, like I said, I am still, you know, thinking about last season a little bit and not expecting the players necessarily to deliver anything like that anytime soon again. I think expectations differ between fan to fan, don't they? And I'm the sort of fan where I don't really need City to win the league every year for me to still love the club and appreciate the players and appreciate the manager. You know, I think it's a tough league to win, and that's what gets forgotten a little bit when outsiders talk about City, is that it's been, what we've achieved has been really, really difficult to do, and I can't imagine them doing that year and year and year again. Perhaps that's just me. That's kind of my mentality. I think one of the many reasons that I never made it as a professional footballer was that I just don't have the hunger and the mentality to keep winning like these players do, like this manager does. So, you know, they're very much going to be wanting to win everything on offer this season. They're going to try their best to do everything. For me, if they don't win anything, given what happened last season, it's not the end of the world. But if, as a minimum, they win the Premier League, then I think we can say we've had a great season.
Yeah, Chris, there's almost a weird way to reflect on last season, because as like from a trophy haul point of view, it's incredible. City won all, you know, they won the treble, they won the Champions League for the first time. In terms of a football point of view, though, and the way that they played up to kind of March, April time, I'm starting to wonder if there's kind of a disconnect between City's best ever team, which I don't think last season was, and the success that it gets. And it, like, I'm kind of wondering there, when you set your expectation level at the start of the season, if it's if we're now kind of transcending the sort of what trophies do you want City to win into how do you want City to play, if that makes sense. Like, you think of that 100-point season, I think that's the best City team I've ever seen. And it probably didn't win what it deserved to win.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean. It's a long old question, that means.
Yeah, I am talking absolute bollocks. I accept that.
It's not. I thought it was just me. No. It's last season was weird in a few ways. The way we won the Champions League, you could argue that, you know, we've played a lot better in that competition and been horrendously unlucky and not won it. There were some moments in the final even where there were some wild missed chances.
Yeah, stroke of luck here and there, yeah.
Looking at you, Romelu. and some great saves. And, you know, the previous seasons, those kind of things have gone against us. No, you need a bit of luck to win a cup competition. And, you know, that certainly came to our aid there. The league as well, like Arsenal, last season was a bit weird in terms of Arsenal, because they were playing so well and they fell away so dramatically that if they hadn't have done that, I mean, it wasn't really any, that wasn't our doing, was it? That was Arsenal falling away more than us picking up, although that obviously galvanised us psychologically. It gave us a lift and we just became that ruthless juggernaut that we kind of are all so familiar with. But it was just weird how that happened. So yeah, it's definitely... just trying to remember the start of the actual question.
Definitely... question I asked 25 minutes ago.
Yeah. he started it 25 minutes ago. He finished it about 22 minutes ago. But like, yeah, definitely not the best team that we've seen in terms of flowing football and, you know, the way we class a great football team, but the best team in terms of mentality and... I think that's been proved, but yeah, it's a blend of the two, isn't it? It's about balance, and we managed to just about get it right. Because if you haven't got the mentality, then you don't win the amount of trophies that we won. It's all very well playing lovely football, but you need that grit, that determination, like I say, a bit of luck.
Yeah, I'm glad you answered that question in that way, because you know, I'm still very much getting back on the horse and back in the saddle for the podcast this season, because that was a fucking woeful question that I asked.
No, not at all. I didn't mean to. But
you gave the answer.
Grumble.
You gave the answer that I wanted. So there, you know, it's all worked out all right in the end.
Don't worry, Mooney. By November, December time, you'll have really hit your stride. And you'll be fine tuning those questions. They'll be streamlined beautifully.
Yeah, exactly that. It's almost like there could be a metaphor in there somewhere.
Arsenal podcast will be rubbish by Christmas.
Yeah. Mike also asked about Haaland. What can we expect from Haaland this season? Because last season was, you know, it was phenomenal, basically. He was new to the league. We always talk about Guardiola's team and signings needing a year to bed in. If that was his year bedding in, then fuck me, what's he going to do this year?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a complete, and you feel free to call me one, a contrarian sort of dickhead for saying this, but I don't think Haaland was that great last season at times. And I know the goal scoring record is inarguable and was phenomenal. You know, 52 goals is fantastic. But there were times to me when I thought, you're a bit crap, actually. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there was just some of his link-up play wasn't very good. Some of his touches were poor. Some of the, you know, he snatched at chances occasionally and then would go on and score four goals and, you know, make a mockery of it. But I think there's a lot more to come from him. And I think that's a really, you know, good thing for us as fans and as a club that, you know, this guy who's got this unbelievable scoring ability still has plenty to add to his game and could still... you know, bed in a lot better with the players around him and link up with them. And I just want to see a bit more of that. You know, I remember the Arsenal home game. I thought he was really good linking up with De Bruyne. You know, he assisted the first goal and had a few other nice moments like that. I'd like to see a lot more of that from Haaland, a lot more, you know, a few more assists to his game and that kind of thing. I think there's plenty of room for improvement there.
Yeah.
And, you know, God help the rest of the league if he does get better, because... And he stays fit, of course, because that was something that I think we took for granted a little bit last season, having had concerns about his fitness at the start of the season. I think, you know, him and the club work really, really hard on making sure that he's, you know, doing everything he can to stay fit and be the best he can be. I just hope that, you know, he doesn't have an injury sort of waiting for him down the line that hampers his progress a little bit, because if he keeps being available every week and putting in these kind of performances and scoring these goals and improving, then yeah, it's going to be phenomenal.
Yeah. Chris, I don't want to spend... Chris, I don't want to spend too long on the pre-season tour because there's only so much you can read into what is effectively a commercial exercise.
I didn't watch any of it.
Well, I was going to say, what are your thoughts kind of going into the season from it? Because like what we hear from it is that commercially it was a great success. There were full stadiums. There was a buzz everywhere City went. Training-wise, wasn't great. You know, the Guardiola was talking about how it was too warm for the players to actually train properly and get into shape. And then the games themselves, the performances, solid but not spectacular. And I kind of guess that's what you expect in the conditions.
Yeah, I think it's what you expect in the in the conditions in terms of the climate or
yeah,
the conditions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I suppose. Yeah, and also. Pre-season, you're not going to be you don't want to overexert. You want to get your fitness. You want to play well. You want to prove that you're capable of staying in the team, but you don't want to get injured. So you play within yourself slightly, I would suggest. The commercial thing, scary, frankly. I mean, I didn't watch the games live. I've watched the highlights of all of them. I do try to kind of decompress, especially after the season like the one we've just had. And get away from all things football and devote a bit more time to other areas for that brief window that it allows us. But the commercial success just looks absolutely mental. Like the amount of fans that turned up in Korea and Japan, it's like, whoa. Yeah, it's just unheard of.
Yeah.
I don't know how many of those would stick around if we were to be... You know, if we fell as dramatically as we've risen, but that hopefully doesn't need proving.
Bring the mood down. That's it. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's why I'm here. That's why I'm here.
Yeah. But, how many of them were at York? That's the question.
Yeah, exactly. But in terms of like for the start of the season and how it makes me feel. It seems to have gone all right. I don't know. Like I said, I haven't really watched the highlights. They seem like a team that knows how to win even when they're not playing well. So that's positive, even though we lost that last game.
Yeah. The other aspect of pre-season, Dan, is it's always an opportunity to have a look at some of the younger players that have kind of returned from loan, that might be coming through the ranks, that sort of thing. Three names have kind of stood out from City fans that watched the tour. James McAtee scored. He was quite lively. Rico Lewis looked at home in the first team, as he has done since he's arrived. And Oscar Bob made a bit of an impression as well.
Yeah, with Rico Lewis, I was really impressed by what I saw against him. I thought against Bayern Munich, he just ran the game and was the best player on the pitch with all those seasoned internationals around him. He just looked so comfortable and so at home. And he's playing in a slightly more attacking role than we're used to, which, you know, I've read some talk that maybe Pep is thinking about using him in that kind of position in competitive games in future, which is interesting. And I think he definitely has the attributes for that. He's, you know, just a very technically gifted player, knows exactly what's going on all around him, as we all saw last season. So really looking forward to seeing him step up this season, how he can develop. Regarding the other two, McAtee and Bob, like, you know, I don't want to shit on young players at all, but I think there is a bit of a danger of overhyping young players when they haven't done an awful lot. And I think we're kind of dancing on that line as City fans a little bit at the moment with these two, from what I've seen of McAtee for City. I know he did well for Sheffield United last season. He doesn't quite look ready to me yet. He looks like he would maybe benefit from another loan, or, you know, will be used very sparingly this season. Maybe he'll come off the bench in the Carabao Cup or something like that. You know, I've also seen people saying that we don't need to sign a replacement for Mahrez. We've got Oscar Bob. Again, I'm sure he's got a great future ahead of him. Hopefully that future is with City. And I know he was the star of the club's Premier League 2 team last season and all that. I just don't think he looks quite there yet. I think we've got to be careful about expecting too much too soon from these young lads. And, you know, Cole Palmer's, I think this time last year, a lot of people were talking about him really kicking on and having a great season, and it just didn't really happen. So, yeah, I think there's definitely potential there for sure. I just wouldn't expect great things from them anytime soon.
Yeah, and that kind of brings us to the transfer window, Chris, because, I mean, so far, Gundogan and Mahrez gone, Kovacic in with, at the time of recording, it's looking like Guardiola will join as well.
Potentially, I think that's been confirmed, hasn't
has
it?
Has it been confirmed in the time that we've been recording? I've not seen.
Oh, right, in the time that we've been recording.
No, it's not official.
Is it not, still not a done deal? Jeez.
No, not quite. But it's looking like it's going to be there soon, and by the time people hear this, it might well have happened. And at the same time, you know, Cancelo could be leaving, Walker could be leaving, Laporte could be leaving, Bernardo possibly, but probably staying put. Like it feels like there is a lot more outgoing than incoming. And does that make you feel a little bit nervous?
A little bit. That's understating it. I'm cacking it a bit. It's like the weirdest transfer window ever. I kind of understand players having won what we won last season, seeking a fresh challenge. You know, some of them are at the stage in their lives where it makes perfect sense they're to move to maybe a different culture, a warmer climate, another big club, a fresh challenge. But I don't know, from our point of view, it's like you can't really afford to hemorrhage all of this influence in the dressing room and on the pitch, experience and mentality and basically everything, the such big components in the whole in terms of what makes us what we are, that to lose what we've lost and certainly what we look like we might be losing, it's going to be an absolutely crazy success if we do well this season and lose Walker, Mahrez. I'm not going to say Cancelo because he was kind of a bit
player. He was gone already last season, wasn't he?
But Gundogan, if Bernardo goes, Laporte, I don't understand why he's going, why we're looking to sign someone in his position. It's weird. I mean, I understand from his point of view, I just don't understand why he's not playing more. It's just the whole thing is in such a state of flux, and we're really near the start of the season that even if we, you know, do bring them in, there's no time to bed anyone in. It could take time for them to gel. I mean, these theoretical people that haven't signed. The fact is, we don't know who we're replacing, so how can we sign anyone? It's all just a little bit too strung out, and I am a bit strung out as a result.
At least you're not panicking, though. That's that's all right.
Did that sound panicked? That was I thought you'd been really calm. This is really like measured. That nobody will see how panicked you are.
Right, yeah, we could hear the hyperventilating on this side.
That yeah, was, it's, yeah, it's squeaky bum time, and the season's not even started.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Get a dollop of City Nostalgia every Monday. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Dan, we mentioned Bernardo, and I said possibly leaving, but probably staying. You kind of get the impression that the window for him to leave is closing again very quickly, isn't it? It feels like this guy's going to be here till the end of recorded time.
Yeah, probably, yeah. I mean, to me, it's one of the biggest mysteries in football that no one's come in and snapped him up yet. You know, in the past 3 years, basically, he's been available for transfer at a pretty reasonable price, I would say, and nobody's come in for him. I think he's perhaps made it a little bit difficult for himself in that it seems that he's only really interested in joining Barcelona or Real Madrid, and neither of those have either had the money or the need for him. So it's kind of limited his options quite significantly. There's a lot of talk about PSG. You know, the rumour is that they made an offer of 60 million euros, which City said was not enough, and it is not enough. You know, that would be a bargain for him, I think. So I don't know what they were trying to pull there. And if he stays, I have no doubt that he'll do what he does every single year and knuckle down and be absolutely brilliant and be a leader in the dressing room and a super player on the pitch. You know, you don't have to worry about that with Bernardo at all, do you?
Do you think he'll stay?
Yeah, I do actually. Yeah, just because I don't think anyone's going to come in for him at this point. And you know, I would have been a bit annoyed with him if he'd gone to PSG actually, because to me that doesn't seem like, you know, Paris isn't even that nice, really. Like as a city, it's probably slightly nicer than Manchester, but like, you know, weather wise and stuff, it's not that much better. He's played in France already. You know, there was the Saudi Arabia links at some point as well, which, you know, I try not to judge players too harshly for taking that money. But that would have been, again, like, you know, he's way too good to play at that level, and he's way too good to play in Ligue 1, I think. So I think for him and for us, it'll be really positive if he stays. And, you know, there's always going to be some chat until the last second of the transfer window about Barcelona pulling 80 million euros down the back of the sofa and paying for him. But I just don't see it happening at this point.
Yeah. Who would we replace him with? I mean, he offers so much. You need to sign two players.
He would be irreplaceable, I think. Yeah.
Does that make you feel better, though, Chris, that it feels likely that he'll stay?
Well,
no is the answer then, is it?
it's still uncertain, isn't it? And if we start the first league game and he's still with us, then I'll breathe a little easier.
Yeah.
Just to push back on that a bit, though, like we've lost Gundogan, which is a big loss on the pitch and off the pitch, of course. And I do think Kovacic is a downgrade on him, but he is a very good player. And, it might take a little while for him to bed in.
I don't think it's a like-for-like swap anyway. But
Not really, no. Mahrez leaving is a loss, but it was a bit of a kind of shrug of the shoulders for me personally. So has the upheaval been that much? I know Walker going as well, but he wasn't playing that much. I feel like we've kept the sort of core group together, really.
I think we can push Foden into the sort of void left by Gundogan as he kind of matures and becomes yet more capable of, you know, doing different things in different roles. Mm. Yeah, maybe I'm being overly pessimistic. It's the worst case scenario that I'm scared of, that we lose Walker and we also lose Bernardo. Well, the little rant I went on earlier, I'm not going to do it again, but it's just... That is why I'm worried. And until that is sealed as not happening, then it will continue to chip away at me a little.
How many more players do we need, do you think, at this point?
Well, I think we could do with a winger, just in terms of an outlet to switch up in games. Just having... But again, then you got... Foden can play so many roles. And I don't know. How many have we lost? We've lost Gundogan. We've lost... Well, effectively, we'd lost Cancelo already.
Gundogan, Mahrez and Walker, isn't it, at the main?
Yeah. Walker's going to be very difficult to replace.
Laporte's been replaced by Guardiola, essentially. So.
Yeah. Maybe I am being over. This is good therapy, guys. I appreciate it. Maybe it's not as bad as all that.
Just to push back on that a little bit, Dan.
pushing back now,
isn't it?
Yeah. My concern is... just a couple of injuries. I thought one of the things that goes under the radar a little bit from City last season is that they got quite lucky with the fitness of the players throughout the entire season. If they, you know, they're going to start without De Bruyne, all it takes is in the next couple of weeks, if Foden and Bernardo get a knock and they're not available, then you're already on the bare bones. And it just feels like you don't want to just get players in for the sake of getting players in. They've got to be the right fit. But at the same time, like, you're kind of walking on eggshells a little bit with injuries, aren't you?
Yeah, I think that's always going to be the case with Pep, though, because he likes a small squad and he doesn't like to disappoint people. So he doesn't like the idea of just bringing players in for the sake of it, like you say, just having sort of meat in the room for a rainy day. Like, he'd rather just, you know, put a young player in. And I do wonder as well if the lack of injuries is luck, or is that by design? Is it, you know, the training methods, the way that they prepare the players nutritionally and stuff like that, whether actually we're just doing a really good job to keep these players fit all the time, and actually it's not something we have to worry about too much. I hope that's the case anyway.
God, that's a brilliant pushback to my pushback to that pushback. Yeah.
And just one more thing. I like the idea of this Michael Olise signing from Crystal Palace. That's like, you know, nice 35 million or whatever it would be, something like that. Nice young player to develop. That's the sort of player that I'd like to see us target.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how that goes. There's also the question of the players that are there already, because it's only 8 weeks ago that City were crowned winners of the Champions League, completing a historic treble. We've seen before how difficult it is getting a winning team up for the challenge of defending their titles, but it's not really a problem that tends to bother Pep Guardiola. The Athletic's Sam Lee has been covering the pre-season tour. He's been looking into what the manager has been doing to keep the players hungry for more.
Yes. City had an incredible end to last season.
Coronation year! Manchester City, the kings of English football again!
Manchester City, FA Cup winners, Manchester City, double winners, and as all the players have been saying, now one more.
And Ilkay Gundogan raises this famous old trophy high. Manchester City, the European champions, history-making treble winners. They've reached the promised land. What a night. What a season. Congratulations to Manchester City.
After winning the Champions League and completing the treble, Pep Guardiola has won every major honour he could possibly win at City. And it was put to Ruben Dias this summer that they've actually achieved everything they possibly could do.
Yeah, I know, but I think for you to think that, oh, that's all to achieve, you need to be small-minded or not very ambitious.
The centre-back, perhaps unsurprisingly, says there's still plenty more that the team can do.
Even if I was to have everything, it's still not done because I've done it once. I can always do it twice or three times or four times. And I think for the kind of purpose I've set myself to, that's the way I want to go. It's not about, oh yes, I've won the Champions League, yeah, now I can just hang my boots and that's it. No, I want to make sure that my numbers will be good enough for me to be remembered for a while.
That attitude is what Guardiola will want to see across the squad, because it could be understandable if the levels drop this season. I spoke to Nathan Ake about why that doesn't normally happen at City, though.
The manager already, you know, picked up on that. You know, he doesn't want anyone slipping up or, you know, being too casual. So we know what we have to do. You know, everyone wants the hunters down. I think that's normal. So yeah, now it's about us. How can we do the same again? And I think everyone is ready. We saw already the last few days in training, everyone still runs as hard. So I think that's a positive. And I think the next few games will be good to get our rhythm back. And then from then we start to go again. And I'm sure everyone is as hungry as before.
He says that attitude runs through everybody at the club.
The club, I think, hires people the mandate of each other, who has all got the same mentality. I'm not just talking about players, but also about what I said before, the physios, the staff, everyone, you know, keeps making sure we're on our toes and not just slacking off, and all little rules and stuff they keep in place and make sure we do the same as we do before.
The defender also gave one very specific example of the sort of thing that Guardiola picks the squad up on during pre-season.
It's little things in training. You know, yesterday we spoke about tracking back, you know, when maybe sometimes when things are, you know, when you're good and things are nice, maybe always good on the ball, but when we have to defend and then everyone has to run back, maybe, you know, it's not with the same intensity. Little things like this, the manager really picks it up and, you know, says it straight away, like we can't do that, we can't drop that mentality, because all over the years when we are pressing teams, we come with the energy and we don't let teams breathe and stuff. If we drop that, then yeah, you drop the levels.
Players often talk about how hard pre-season can be. With training focused on getting the squad fit and sharp for the new season, and with Guardiola also making sure they are mentally prepared, those sessions could be vital in keeping the levels up. The makeup of the squad itself is important to maintain in high standards too. Here's Dias again.
Sometimes more than going for a player is to know what kind of player you're going for. Because since I arrived at the club, I had the feeling that normally you go for players, yeah, they're very good. They've got this specific quality. They're a dribbler, they're a winger, fast winger, beautiful. They're very good defenders, they're very good midfielders, but from the start, I had the feeling that these clubs hire more than just that quality. These clubs hires depending on personality and what kind of man are you. And in a way, I think that's one of the reasons why that lack of ambition is never an issue.
Jack Grealish is probably one example of what Dias is talking about there. Have a listen to this from when we spoke to the wing after the 2-1 win against Bayern Munich in Tokyo.
I've said to a few of the guys already, I'm desperate to win the Community Shield. Obviously, I've been here now, but this is my third year. I've played in two finals in the Community Shield and I've lost them both. So, I'm desperate. You know, as a footballer, you want to win everything as much as possible.
And Grealish agrees that the personalities in City's dressing room are an important part of the team's success.
I seen Ruben say the other day about Kovacic, said something like that we're so close, or I couldn't believe how close we are. And listen, we don't just say that for no reason. That is the general truth. We have such a great group here, and hopefully, you know, it can continue.
At City, under Guardiola, successful seasons have normally followed successful seasons. You have to go back until May 2017 to find a campaign that finished with no silverware, and City have been title winners in five of Guardiola's seven seasons at the club. There's only really one year, the 2019-2020 season, where the levels dropped ever so slightly. Diaz thinks a winning attitude is now ingrained at City.
It's not just last season. We've been doing this, and even before me, the club has been at this level for quite a while. So I don't think ambition will always be a problem, because that's the direction the club set out to go for.
It would be very easy to jump to the conclusion that there's nothing left for City to win, and that it would be understandable if the players dropped in this coming season. But with Guardiola in charge, the evidence suggests that if anyone is going to get the better of City this season, then they're going to have to work very hard to do it.
Hi, this is David Bernstein, and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
The Blue Moon Podcast. If City won't let you down on the pitch, let us let you down off it instead.
That was The Athletic's Sam Lee looking at how the players have been kept hungry by Pep Guardiola down the years. Chris, there is something to be said about how Guardiola kind of like drills in this mentality into the players of, yeah, what, everything you've won, go and do it again.
Yeah, he's got an insatiable hunger, hasn't he? And he manages to instill that in his players.
The most ravenous man in football.
He really is. Greedy bastard. But, I mean, yeah, how does he do it? If the answer was a simple one, then everyone would be at it. But I don't know. He's obviously very demanding. He changes the system all the time, so players are constantly learning and having to ask questions of themselves. And, yeah, he just manages to do it season on season. He's constantly evolving, isn't he? Like, even week to week we see it. You ask, we often have a laugh on this programme and we're asked about what formation do you expect or what team selection do you expect, and it's always met with, a bit of derision, because he's very hard to second guess. And I think it's that constant change, that constant state of flux, that constant evolution that keeps him hungry and helps keep the team hungry as well, because it must be exciting to play for him, certainly very demanding. And he just keeps it going and going and going.
Well, now you've said that as well, given what we were talking about with transfers before and how nervous you were, does it give you a level of trust that City can have a summer of missing transfer targets or walking away from deals because they don't feel it's value for money, and the knowledge that they'll still be okay? Because they've done that year after year after year, and year after year after year, Guardiola keeps the squad going, keeps them hungry, and they go out and win things again.
Yeah, I should have more faith. It's hard to ditch that old mentality of doom and gloom, really. Maybe I'm just a miserable bastard.
I didn't want to say it myself.
Well, yeah. Don't want to bring you down, man. But yeah, like we do walk away when we feel it's gone over the point of our, you know, where we value a player. Quite a few of our best players are like second, third, fourth choices. Look at Diaz. Yeah, you got to trust the process. You still get people online slagging off the scouting team and the management setup, even Pep at times. But yeah, the results speak for themselves. So maybe we should shut up and let them get on with it.
Yeah.
Not very good for podcasts, that though, is it?
No, just put out silence for 20 minutes at the end of this bit, yeah. Dan, there is something in this as well in terms of mentality of players, because Diaz was talking about it when he was speaking to Sam there. Chris has just touched on how Diaz was not the first choice centre-back. But all the players they sign, and there are very few that don't hit this criteria, nearly all the players they sign are the right profile. They're players who work hard. They have the right mentality. They fit in with the group. It's incredible, really, how City have so many hits.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it's been well documented. That's something that City's scouting network do a lot of work on, profiling those players and making sure that they're going to be the players that are going to deliver results and have the mentality to do so. And I think by and large, the type of player that we sign doesn't need a lot of extra motivation usually. You know, they've had that fire in their bellies their entire careers, you know, even from being kids playing at amateur level. That's why they've got so far. That's why they've got to the pinnacle of football. And that's what, you know, they want to keep winning year on year for professional pride, and because, you know, they just want to be the best they can be, and will do everything they can. And, you know, I think Erling Haaland's a good example of that. You know, all the players that talk about him talk about he's doing everything he can to make sure that he can be the best he can possibly be. And we're very lucky that he's going to give us some of the best years of his career to us. And I think with Pep, you know, the way that he keeps players motivated, well, I think there's a bit of an aura around Pep, isn't there, for a start? I think players come to play for him, and he has this reputation of improving players. You know, I think if we'd signed Harry Maguire, you know, he's one of those players that we walked away from a few years ago and has had a pretty dismal career since. I think his career trajectory would have been completely different if he'd signed for City. Yeah. And he would be considered one of the top players in English football, if not European football, one of the top defenders, because Pep would have made him better, and Pep would have coached him, you know, coached some of his flaws out of him. And he just hasn't had that level of coaching. And I think as a player, you kind of don't want to disappoint Pep. You want to come in and you want to learn from him and you want to improve. And that's something that he has going for him. And also, you know, we saw last season, City 2-0 down at halftime to Spurs, come roaring back to win 4-2. Everyone leaves the ground delighted. Season's back on track. Title race is back on track. You know, everyone's buzzing. Guardiola goes in the dressing room, gives him a massive bollocking, then goes in front of the media, gives him another massive bollocking. That speaks to the standards that he feels that he deserves as a coach, and he won't let those slip. You know, if he's going to bollock his players at a moment like that, then you know, imagine what he's saying to them when they're playing shit and losing games. So I think he's just going to keep trying to use the kind of motivational techniques throughout the season. I think he does it every season, and yeah, hopefully the players have got the energy to go again, because that's the thing that could hold them back this season for me, more than sort of the mentality. Probably the physical aspects might be difficult to keep going again.
Yeah, God, imagine the pressure. You've just played one of the best games you've ever played, and he comes up, you go into him, and he's just saying, you know what, you could do this, this, and this better. And you're just like, mate, come on. That's like, Dan, if there's any reason why you didn't make it as a professional footballer, that's one of mine. I couldn't take the criticism.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, do you remember him having a go at Sterling after the, we won the trophy, but was it the FA Cup final when he was like bollocking Sterling on the pitch about something?
Yeah.
You just think, give it a rest, mate. But that's why he's the greatest.
Yeah.
I think players appreciate that as well. I mean, if someone's constantly telling you how you can improve, how he can help you improve, and you know that every time he's done that in the past, he's been right. Because players talk about, don't they? Like there's almost a kind of psychic prediction to his tactical nous. He says, this is going to happen. You're going to do this. We're going to move the ball out there. You're going to make this run, and then we will score. And, you know, I can't remember the exact example, but I'm sure you've heard similar interviews. It's not just one player that said that. And he makes things so meticulous that he knows how the shape is going to change when the ball's in a particular area and we've just had a turnover or what have you. And he predicts how goals will happen, and it happens. So even if he does drag you to one side after you've just won the FA Cup final and says, by the way, if you do this, this and this, you're going to get even better. You're going to stop what you're doing and listen. And I remember Raheem was kind of froze in the action of, I'm going over here, and he just stopped and listened and nodded and nodded and nodded, and he's like tapping his foot a little bit, nodding. But they all take it on board, and you know that when you're coming into the club as well, what he's like. So you're not coming on board thinking it's going to be an easy ride. You're coming on board, you know,
you want the challenge,
that challenge. Yeah.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
Right, so it's time to have a look now at the Community Shield on Sunday. And we welcome back to the show at this point Arsenal fan Michael Kashani.
Hi, how's it going?
Not too bad, thanks. Not too bad. I mean, like, we kind of have to start with the elephant in the room of kind of how things went last season before we get into this season. Now that you've had the summer and now that obviously you're preparing for the new season, how are you reflecting on last year?
I mean, overall, it was... success feels like a very loaded word, but it was definitely a huge positive right up until mid-April. And, you know, then that's, what, about 80% of a season. You've got to take that in your stride and look forward. And, you know, we've clearly got something good going. There's a lot of room to progress. It's quite a young team. And so, yeah, the general feeling's much more about optimism than any despondency about how last year ended.
Yeah. How's pre-season gone for you?
I haven't watched any of it. I use that as my time to tune out. But I've then, because I'm still an addict, I still read all about it. it seems fairly mixed. It seems like so last year we basically only had one way of playing, which is part of why we came unstuck at the end. And it was all about having the same 11 all the time and doing the same stuff. And if one piece fell out, or a few important pieces fell out, then we completely fell apart. So I think he's trying to introduce a lot more variety. But obviously, as you lot have seen, that variety can take a little bit of time. And to bring in something just slightly different and to make the team have these multiple ways of playing, which I think will pay off quite a lot, but I think we'll have a bit of a patchy start to the season.
Yeah. And before we get to this game in particular, what are you kind of hoping for this season? Because I guess after last season, you can't be... You can never... I always find it hard as a City fan these days to go into a season and say, I hope we win the title. But as a team that hasn't won the title for 20-odd years, you kind of... I kind of wonder if the expectations are slightly different.
I mean, in that sense, I think it's more of the same, really, just a slightly different ending. Just the whole thing of... be as good as we were. I want to see progress and I want to make a real run at the title and at least one of the other proper competitions, because we didn't have the squad last year to go further in at least not in the Europa League, because that would have taken too much out. I would have liked to have gone further in the FA Cup, but obviously we met you lot pretty early, which wasn't ideal.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want proper across the board competing, and like, as much as, you know, we all want trophies, I think if we, you know, there's another season of second and proper impressive runs, you can live with it. Like, it's not what I want, but I want to see that progress that means that we're properly competing again.
Yeah. So just focusing on the game then, Chris, I'll come to you first from a City point of view. What sort of team are you hoping for this year? Because it's the last few seasons, City have had players away, they've had international duty, and they've had, you know, a kind of truncated pre-season with players arriving late. This year, it feels like the first time in a long time that they've actually got a full squad going into this game.
Well, you say a full squad. I mean, it's a full squad of players we have left from the previous, rather fuller squad. I suppose the broader question of what sort of team do I want to see going into the season is one that learns quickly and is very adaptable. I'm not too fussed about the Charity Shield because we have a habit of performing badly in that and then learning from it. But it's just been such a weird situation. I don't really know whether this is our squad.
Yeah.
that we see before us at the moment. Are we going to add to it? Are we going to lose from it, which seems more likely than adding to it at this stage? We've brought in Kovacic and Gvardiol, and we've lost some really, really key players. There's a lot kind of... as things stand, there's a lot expected of some of the younger players who have recently come through into the team and some who are on the fringes and wanting to. So, yeah. I suppose part of evolution is the one's best able to adapt, survive. So hopefully we can do that.
So what you want is to survive. That's the that's the bare minimum.
Yeah. Obviously, the bare minimum is not getting relegated. Yes. You've got me there. That is still the mentality in my the id.
Yeah. Dan, Chris mentioned the youngsters there. City have lost the last few Community Shields with a squad of youngsters. I'm wondering if it'll be slightly different this year with a few more players available, if we'll see a stronger team. But also of the youngsters that played in pre-season, there's kind of a couple of opportunities there, maybe, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think people have been impressed by what they've seen from James McAtee and Oscar Bobb in pre-season. I think it's a chance for Cole Palmer, who's been talked about as maybe going out on loan or maybe leaving permanently this summer, a chance for him, you know, especially with Mahrez going, to maybe make a case for himself in this game. I wouldn't expect any of those three players to start this game, to be honest. I think we're probably looking at kind of a similar starting lineup to the one that played against Atletico Madrid in the last preseason friendly. And
a kind of Premier League starting lineup.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I've pretty much thoroughly unplugged from things over the summer as well. But yeah,
I was going to ask actually if you've watched them all.
I've had so much time on my hands that I've actually watched all three of the preseason friendlies. Oh, and yeah. I was impressed by the kind of level of sharpness in the first half of the Atletico Madrid game. They looked really on it. They looked like they were, you know, going to hit the ground running this season. And then obviously Pep made 10 changes at halftime or whatever it was, and it all fell apart in the second half, really. But yeah, from what I saw in that game, they looked good. I suppose there's sort of question marks over, is Laporte going to play? Because, you know, whether it looks like he's going to be going out the door at some point. Kyle Walker is another one who keeps playing in preseason, keeps captaining the team, despite the fact he's moments away from departure, it seems. So I don't know if Nathan Ake is fit enough to come back in. Maybe Akanji comes back in, but I'd want to see a similar kind of starting lineup to the one that's going to play at Burnley next week, really.
Yeah. Can we tell listeners why you've had a lot of time on your hands?
Well, yeah, I fell off my bike and broke my arm about a month ago. So I was signed off work and I've been...
high as a kite on pain meds, yeah.
High as a kite on pain meds and watching City pre-season games, which I wasn't that high that I found those enjoyable, though, to be honest.
Good, good. I like to at least you kept your feet on the ground for something, at least. Kesh, for Arsenal going into this one, what sort of shape is the squad in at the moment? Are you expecting to see, I mean, there's been a couple of new signings, are you expecting to see them kind of thrown in there and into a new setup?
I mean, yeah, I'd expect so. So we had a pre-season game last night where it was a very sort of, he was messing around with the team a lot. He's sort of looking at this formula, trying to rotate in this guy, that guy. Gabriel Jesus is out for a few weeks, which is a very not ideal way to start things off. So he won't play. But yeah, I'm expecting that he'll want to go in with a pretty set team, the kind of thing that we'll expect to see in the first week of the season.
Chris, for City and going into this one, and you know, given what we were saying about pre-season earlier in the show, how important is the result for this one compared to previous years? You said before, but like City have a habit of not doing very well in this game and then, you know, doing well in the season. Is that, you know, we heard Grealish has been talking about how he's never won the Community Shield and wants to win it, and that sort of level of hunger. Do you think there is a little bit more importance on the result this time around, given the players that City will have available?
Well, it's good for everyone to get a trophy on the first, you know, the opening day. If we are playing a lot of youngsters and they do that, then yeah, it's even better for them in terms of morale. Personally speaking, from a fan point of view, I'm not overly concerned about a one-off game for a trophy that doesn't mean an awful lot. I'm more concerned about how we play, lack of injuries, you know, how cohesive we're looking. It's going to be a real shame if we play some big players that then leave, because even if we win, what was the point in that? You've got, you know, it doesn't really help the team in the long term. And this trophy, which sounds sort of trite of me, but it's not really of a massive concern in the grand scheme of things. Yeah. So performance over result for me, I would say.
We could get João Cancelo a final leaving present. I don't know, Dan, maybe?
Hopefully not, no. Hopefully he doesn't play any part in it. Well, apparently he's close to joining Barcelona, isn't he? Is the latest rumour. So it wouldn't surprise me if he didn't travel this weekend.
Yeah. Oh, Moneybags Barca, eh?
Yeah. Kesh, the other side of this from an Arsenal point of view is, I guess there's kind of the opportunity to get one over on City. And it's like, again, don't want to kind of, well, I mean, I'm not going to lie, I do want to gloat a little bit about last season. there's the opportunity to kind of lay a marker down where you look at the three games that we played last season. Going into them as a City fan, I just sat there and said I'd be surprised if we beat Arsenal in all three. And then by the end of the season, when we'd won two and we're going into that third game, I was supremely confident with the way that both teams were playing. There's almost the chance of almost the opportunity here for Arteta to go, you know what, we're not a busted flush. We are going to be on your toes again this season.
Yeah, I think that will be in his head, definitely. And it's one of those things, it's almost quite stupid to attach that to the Community Shield. But with the first two games, they were both ones that could have gone either way. City had the edge. And then obviously the third was just a complete washout. But that'll be in his head. I think he wants to, he's very big on showing that we're serious. That we're here to be taken seriously. Which, you know, you can write your own jokes about. But I think he'll really want at least that marker of a win against City as a reference point as well for the team. So when it does come to, I think the first game's in October, and then whenever the other one is, probably February or March, then we have that. It's like, all right, we can beat this lot. This lot can be beaten. And then move from there, and that be our base point.
Yeah. So what are you expecting for this season, kind of overall aims and objectives?
I think another proper run at the title is what I want. I think, like I said, we'll have a bit of a patchy start. I think we'll try and seek some inspiration from your lot last year, where obviously first half of the year was broadly good, but bits to improve upon. A little bit lacking in the small details, and then for everything to just be ready from January and to go on some kind of run. And obviously setting City as the benchmark is an idiot's game. But I think that, I mean, he's a high, Arteta's a high aiming guy, so that'll be very much in his head.
Yeah.
Like as I said before, I just want proper challenging over the course of all the competitions. And like, it's very, as you lot have said, like City's squad is very difficult to know. Like there's going to be, seemingly going to be a few more outgoings. No rumours on incomings that I've seen apart from Guardiola. You'd assume there's some kind of plan and they know what they're doing, but famous last words, and it does feel a little bit less like the Terminator team than it was last year, partly because Gundogan's gone, and when it comes to April, obviously everyone knows he just changes into God.
Yeah. Dan, what about you for this game? What are you expecting in terms of a matchup? Because what I was kind of getting at there with Kesh is that I suspect Arsenal are going to be really up for it and really kind of pushing to lay a marker down. And I wonder how much City will respond to that, because there's almost a case of, they might see this as low priority, but there's almost a case of, you know, like back in your box. You got to know your place.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's a chance to put a marker down for us, for sure. And, you mentioned Grealish said that he really wants to win it. I think Pep's been quite publicly fuming in the past when City haven't turned up for the Community Shield and haven't put a good performance in and have lost it. You know, it's been a little while since we've won it now. And, you know, the septuple is up for grabs this season, isn't it, for us? So if you're going to include the Community Shield in that. So it's, first trophy of the season. My philosophy on the Community Shield is always the same. It's if we win it, lovely. If not, I'm not that bothered, really. But I think the players, you know, have a lot of professional pride here, and they want to really find some form before the start of the season. And it's been an interesting pre-season, because, you know, in the past few years, we've sort of had an international tournament to contend with over the summer. You've had players coming back late. That's explained the strange team selection in these Community Shield games. Now, even though it feels like the Champions League final was 2 weeks ago, the whole squad are there and ready to go, and it's a chance for everyone to show Pep what they can do, and hopefully put in a good performance and get a good result.
Yeah. Chris, do you think we'll get a bit of an idea of how Guardiola will set up long term for this season? Because he keeps it throughout pre-season, he kept trying Kyle Walker as an overlapping fullback. Now, obviously, there's the question mark of whether Walker's going to be an option later in the season, but it kind of gives him the opportunity to play against a side that is, you know, going to be up there and going to be challenging, and just try a few things out.
Potentially, but again, it does come back to the sort of skewing of the whole situation. If you've got a couple of systems where you want to utilize Kyle Walker because of his attributes, if Kyle Walker goes, you can't necessarily just slot in Rico Lewis there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably the worst example I could have picked, because generally speaking, you probably you can. Yeah. But do you know what I mean? Not to the same extent. And I don't think he'd risk him in certain situations where he would with Walker, in terms of the player's development and in terms of the sort of, well, just the risk he's willing to take in certain games. It's totally up in the air. I'd love to give an answer that I felt confident in on these sorts of questions, but it's been such a weird window. We're in such a sort of...
My question is also, effectively, simply predict what Guardiola's going to do is like it's a bit of a bad ball to receive, that, isn't it?
Well, do you think this formation is going to influence the formation he picks next week? I don't know. Don't ask me about the whole season. Do you know what I mean? But it's a difficult one. I want some kind of resolution to all these loose ends. Even if it's yes, they're definitely gone, at least you know then. It's just this uncertainty which is hanging over us, which is kind of a bit of a pain in the posterior.
Yeah. Same question for you, Cash. If you swap out the word Guardiola for Arteta, are we going to get a few clues of to what he'll do for the season?
I would imagine so. I think, as I said, he's trying to make it a bit weirder. He's trying to make us more variable, and I think we'll see the stuff. I think what we'll probably see on Sunday is the stuff that won't work for now. So stuff that we're trying to integrate two thirds of a new midfield at once. So probably if everyone's fit, I'd imagine it's Rice at the base, then Havertz and Odegaard. And that's a big change from the setup of last year. Obviously, two different personnel. I think we'll see that, and he's going to try and make it work in the low stakes moments, like a Community Shield.
Yeah.
While also still wanting to win because they're all very good players.
Yeah. You signed Kai Havertz as well. That was that name took me by surprise when you said it. Then
it still feels a bit strange, but it is one of those because where you just have to sort of trust the judgment of the people who've you know, doing all the proper scouting and all that, because he's not someone who I would have signed, especially not for midfield. But they clearly want him and what he has, and he's, you know, he does offer a lot. So yeah, maybe that's they want his specific quality. So there's clearly a plan for him, but they just have to make sure that it comes together properly. So yeah, I'm watching everything, or I will be watching everything he does quite interestedly.
Yeah.
That's even a word.
Yeah.
With intrigue.
It is now.
You could be the first citation. That's what that's what you are. The first citation of that word in the new dictionary.
Never thought this is how I'd go into history, but here we are.
Yeah, right. Well, the football returns. So does the charity bet with our aims of grandeur once again. Last season, we raised a total of £1,090 for the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. We're aiming to better that this time around. And in a world where the cost of living is still spiraling out of control and where the number of people living in poverty is growing, we're going to be supporting the group again on the charity bet this season. William Hill is giving us 3 £10 correct score singles. So let's have those predictions for the first time this year. We will start with you, Chris. What are you having?
I've gone for 1-1 in normal time and us to win on pens, which is obviously a bit of a lottery.
Yeah.
I know the bet only allows for normal time predictions, but that's what I've gone for.
Well, 1-1. 1-all at full time is 13-2 and £65 if you are right. Dan?
I've gone for 2-1 in normal time.
2-1 in normal time is to City, I presume.
Yes.
Yes. That's 15-2 and £75 if you're right. Kesh, what are you having?
I never predict us to win on these things, so I'm going to make a change. I'm going to say 2-0 to the Arsenal.
If it comes in, it's 25-1 and £250 to kick us off for this season. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over. Well, yeah. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change, and please gamble responsibly. To find out more about responsible gambling, then take a look at begambleaware.org. Kesh, honestly, I really don't care about the Community Shield, so I hope you're right on that one, and your net is £250.
Neither do I. Go do it for the people, see?
Yeah, yeah, exactly that. Thank you very much. I will wish you the best for the season, but with the caveat that I hope it's to a second place and it's behind City.
I'd wish you the best for the season, but I don't like to lie.
Exactly that. Thank you very much, mate.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Now, when the kickoff time for the Community Shield was announced, there was frustration among a lot of City fans. The game was originally scheduled for 5:30 p.m. at Wembley on Sunday, the latest the match has ever been planned for, meaning that those travelling from Manchester would be home very, very late. In response, a campaign by the 1894 group and the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group helped bring the kickoff forward by about 90 minutes. To talk about that issue and the intended boycott of the game and a screening being put on in Manchester's Northern Quarter, I've been speaking to Nick from the Food Bank Group and first Dante Friend from 1894.
We were approached by fans and we monitored fans on social media, and that's we kind of entered floated the idea of a boycott probably about 24 hours after the announcement had been made. So I just want to make sure that people understand it. It's not like a group of fans 1894 just thought one moment, let's boycott the game and then like try and coerce everybody else into it like sheep. You know, we've kind of, so when we go public with something, it's normally on the back of we think public opinion is in this, you know, in that direction. So, and then we went on TalkSport on the Monday. The Tuesday, the game had been then put forward to 4 o'clock, which was obviously, you know, a win of sorts. It didn't really feel like a win. And then, you know, as kind of what we did say, like, you know, I think 3 o'clock would have been an ideal time for, you know, all of our fans who normally go, who want to go, to go. United against City is 3 o'clock on a Saturday for the cup final, and both sets of fans are coming from the north, then there shouldn't be any reason why City-Arsenal should take place any other time other than three, because the Arsenal fans have just got a very short journey. We were surprised by the reaction towards the food bank. We thought, well, this is good. We know we might get a few hundred quid. But actually, it was really, really, people were saying, I'm not going to go to the game and I am going to donate my money to this cause. It's a, you know, we want to make a point here and rather help people, you know, really need the help. And the comments, it wasn't just the donations. If you look at the comments, which were also, first of all, very favourable about the food banks, but also scathing about the scheduling and the FA, and I think there was a bit of convincing to do with the fans out there that weren't City fans, these kind of Liverpool fans and Arsenal fans who were kind of saying, well, you're not going to sell out your end anyway, that's why you carried it on. It's simply not the case. A lot of people in our group who have like, done a lot of campaigning on fan issues over many, many years, and there shouldn't be any doubt in the convictions of why people wanted to do that. Like I say, it would be easy just to say, oh yeah, we've got 4 o'clock. But I think the fact that 80% of the normal season ticket holders that would have gone to that game still boycotted the game. I know we've sold out, but there's about 15,000 of the season ticket holders that would normally go aren't going. As you know, the tickets went on sale and they really had to come up with some sort of bizarre criteria. You know, the tickets were basically on general sale from 1 p.m. on the third day, which is where the uplift came. We sold 3,500 tickets in 2 days, and then we sold 25,000 to 26,000 tickets on day three. And it's simply this criteria they came up with, which was anybody can have more tickets. So, yeah, so you get the full end, and it will look good on TV. And I'm pleased for the players that they play in front of fans. However, it doesn't solve the problem. We've had probably about 95 to 98% of fans be very positive. You know, you got us the move in terms of the time. We do appreciate that. And, you know, 4 o'clock when that game ends, people have still got to get home at silly o'clock. And, you know, I just wonder, you know, at 6 o'clock, everyone's got that game's over. We've all got to get home sort of thing.
Well, let's bring Nick in, because Nick, for the food bank group, as Dante says, the response has been fantastic from City fans. What has this meant for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, just straight from the off, the fundraiser, considering it's been going for about a month, 5 weeks, something like that, it's just under £10,000, which is absolutely, you know, We couldn't have imagined it was going to be that. We've spoken to the food bank, Manchester Central Food Bank, where it's going to go to. We visited them a couple of times in the past month, and they've already said that the amount has covered their food purchases for the entire summer, which is incredible. You know, summer's a time when they they don't tend to get donations and things like that. And obviously, our collections outside match days aren't going up because we're not playing. So it's huge. It's big. That amount is a huge. It's going to be a huge difference to how well they can support families and people struggling in Manchester at the moment. This has been an issue for years and years now. Which is why we set ourselves up. And the fact that even on the off season when we're not doing our collections outside the games, City fans can still come together and make a massive, massive difference in our local communities. It's a real testament to how community-minded the support is.
The food bank guys, I mean, they've actually played a massive part. I mean, it's not like, you know, we've got a big social media reach, but at the same time, Nick and others on the food bank Twitter feed were in a constant battle for about 10 days with fans of all different clubs who kind of simply didn't understand that, you know, Manchester City have real fans who actually have a social conscience and a moral compass. And actually, you know, Nick, every time Nick made a moral argument, you know, about the game and won people over, you could see the donations rising. And, you know, so they deserve every single penny of this. You know, they actually had to do a lot of work where we weren't answering people back on our Twitter feed. It was all being done on the MCFC Food Bank Twitter feed. So they absolutely deserve every penny. And I think they've won over people. I think people realise what an important role they play.
I mean, even this issue as well, it's not specific to City fans, is it? This is something that is important for all fans of all groups. And it's not just raising money for local things like the food banks in those communities. It is kickoff times for both for all fans as well, isn't it?
This is it. This is it is absolutely not a City issue at all. This has been an issue that's been affecting supporters in this country increasingly at an exponential rate over the past 20 odd years, arguably longer. This is us now. You know, Dante said before, depending on how the league and cup go next year, this could be Newcastle and Liverpool fans being asked to travel 400 for Newcastle down to Wembley, because we're getting kickoff times dictated to us by TV companies. It's ITV this time, but we've just heard, Sunday? We're going to have Sunday 7 PM kickoffs next season for the first time ever. This is a joke. You know, we met with some fan groups from across Europe earlier in summer, and met with a fellow from Germany who was part of a group that was successful in campaigning to ban Monday night football in the Bundesliga. I mean, I know we're a bit of a way off that, but imagine what a massive win that has been for German supporters. If we had Saturday 3 PMs back again, the way it was, you know, we can plan our weekends around that. You know, we can actually still have more of a social life around losing a Sunday night, a Saturday night now, which we're gonna start getting more of as well. Friday nights against Burnley. Don't get me wrong, a couple of people enjoy the away days, but this is for the vast majority of match going fans. It's an added expense at a time when people can't really afford these things, and so. It's brilliant to have support from other clubs. Yeah, we have to battle a little bit. You know, people love slagging City fans off on Twitter. But once you actually cut through the initial stupid insults and stuff, people actually like, ah, nah, right, you've got a point, and this is it. If we bring more football fans together on this, then we'll have wins. And at the screening, we've actually just found out yesterday that the fan supporting food banks, the Evertonians and Liverpool fans will be coming down with their big bus and making a donation and showing support for the boycott as well, which is fantastic.
I think it will become an issue. So next season, I think it's 24-25 where these Sunday 12 and Sunday 7 PM games come in. And some people were saying to us, you know, I totally agree with it, but maybe it's the wrong game to do it. Obviously, the wrong game to do it would be, yeah, they make it open sale quite easy, and that's what they're going to probably do with all the league games now as well. I think the Burnley, the Sheffield United game's gone like very quick to, you know, you've got 3 hours to buy your ticket and it goes to the next big banding sort of thing. This is what they'll do. They know we've got a growing fan base and they can fill it with other people. So newer fans, you know, don't get me wrong, people are probably desperate to go and see the club, but obviously if some people who go everywhere where are unhappy, the club know now they can tap into fans who are on the waiting list and they may also fill those seats for them. So challenge for us is to make these issues really relevant to people who are going now and again, as well as the people who are going kind of regular. We've got quite a good relationship with kind of the core fan base, but what we need to do is sort of reach out to those people who maybe watch a lot of the games on TV. There's so many aspects of this, and you're always going to get a percentage of people who have a 20-year record who don't want to miss a game, and you know, will support the principle of it. Like, everybody's even bought a ticket for our end. I'm sure they all support the principle of a protest that something needs to be done. But, you know, cities, people have miserable lives and people want to go and watch the team that's just won the treble. So City, that team brings us so much joy that, you know, it's a hard thing for you to not go to the game. And some people feel it's like you turn your back on a club and they've not turned their back on all sort of things. So these are all these things that it's so hard. We've got to maybe make a line in the sand and start somewhere. And I think the take from it is, yes, it looks like it's a full house. However, it needed citizens and non-regular supporters to fill that end, and we don't know who's who in that end on Sunday.
So, Dante, tell us about the event at Band on the Wall on the weekend.
Yeah, this has come about from one of our members who's involved in the kind of hospitality trade, and then made an instruction to Band on the Wall for us. So we've not used this venue before. So we've got 500 fans going. The capacity is 630, but we've limited it just over 500 because otherwise it gets a bit clammy. And half of the profits from the ticket sales are going to MCFC Food Bank. So again, that should be another grand plus in the bag. There's also the opportunity for people to bring along donations. If you are coming, please bring a bag or some tins. There will be capacity to store it, which will be helpful. And we're probably going to do some sort of a raffle, you know, some 50-50 bingo thing as well. So there might be, a good little kind of closing this food bank fundraiser off. We could get maybe another 1,500 over the weekend, which would be absolutely amazing, because we do have to think about the price of food, and if people can buy the food early, would be great. Doors open at 2, closes at 7. So come early, there'll be food on. It's pub prices, so it's £5.50, £6 a pint. There's a lot of choice of booze. They're going to be playing Manchester music, so stuff from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and modern. Well, not so much modern, but, you know, not just Manchester, but, you know, good music from all over the decades. And obviously then there's no kind of ex-players, there's no kind of big celebrities there. It's just a group of fans who want to get together and watch the game. And then obviously hopefully there'll be like some prizes, some raffle things after the game. And I think it's going to be really positive. And we're going to miss the game, but we are going to be getting home at 7, 8 o'clock at night, which is a bonus when people are going to be stuck at Watford Gap Services or whatever. So this will be home.
That's the first time we've worked with 1894 Group on behalf of the food bank, and it's been a brilliant experience, and I can't wait for Sunday. It's going to be absolutely amazing to have that many blues there watching the game in an iconic Manchester venue, raising so much more funds than, I mean, we'll have raised more funds than we already did in the entirety of last season for this, which is incredible. And then we've got the first game, first collection a couple of weeks later. I think it's Newcastle at home, isn't it? So, yeah, we look forward to seeing everyone there, familiar faces at our collections next season.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Listen to it. Drink it in.
Nick from the Man City Fans Food Bank Support and Dante from 1894 talking us through this weekend's boycott and the screening going on in the Northern Quarter. As Dante says, tickets are now sold out to the screening at Band on the Wall, but you could still be there. We've got two tickets that you could win, and you could be watching the Community Shield with hundreds of other City fans at the venue in the Northern Quarter. If you want to be in with a chance of winning, all you've got to do is email your full name and your phone number to us. bluemoonpodcast@gmail.com is the way to do it. That's bluemoonpodcast@gmail.com. You need to get your entries in before midday UK time on Saturday. That's Saturday the 5th of August. And if you're the lucky winner whose name is selected at random, the organisers will be in touch with your tickets to the screening. So remember, that's your name and your phone number to bluemoonpodcast@gmail.com. All entries need to be received before midday UK time on Saturday the 5th of August. Now, it's time to finish this week with some audience questions. Get them in on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast. You can email through the website as well, bluemoonpodcast.com. Fill in the form, you know the drill. David on Twitter says, could you discuss the ticket price increase for next season? It's now over £70 for Category A games on the third tier. That's what you'll be paying for Champions League knockout games as well next season. Here's how the system works. All games are now on sale to match day and junior members who have attended five or more home fixtures at the Etihad over the last two seasons. Tickets are also limited to one per qualifying supporter. And I had a quick look at this because obviously as a season ticket holder, I didn't realise that this was the case. But it seems that tickets are now available for all of City's home games. And Chris, I'm just wondering, that it almost kind of closes the door that on a lot of fans because you can't make plans for games that are coming months in advance, can you?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Apparently, it's been like this for more than just this season. We were chatting about this in a WhatsApp group, and but regardless of how long it's been going on, the question is the same. If you're making them all available at the start of the season, you know you can't necessarily make those plans. It's not even just that, just the price of it. I mean, I've ranted on here before about the cost of
the price.
When is it going to be too much? I mean, if they put it up to £200 for like the highest category game and there's still people buying it, or you know, does that justify the price? I mean, it's just absolutely nuts.
I guess it kind of speaks into that. I mean, we're talking about the success commercially of the tour before. I guess it kind of speaks into that. You know, if your regulars are not buying those tickets because it's too much for them, other people will come along and take them now.
That vacuum will soon be filled. And there's people, due to the state of this country, there's more affluent countries with plenty of City fans that will easily be able to not only snap those tickets up, but fly in for a weekend and come and see their team. And that is the way it is. And it doesn't seem fair on the sort of local, perhaps less affluent fans. And that's because it probably isn't.
Yeah. Look at the Community Shield this weekend. I mean, you know, the lads have organised this boycott that's been really widely supported, and yet we've still sold out the allocation. Only City could sell out an allocation for a boycotted game, couldn't they?
True.
That's this weird, like, this situation we're in as a club now where supply has met demand, which worries me a little bit. Because, like you say, like, you know, if people were to turn their nose up at £70, which is, you know, a ridiculous amount of money for 90 minutes of not even guaranteed the entertainment and not go to the game, someone will take that ticket now. The days of empty had are a thing of the past, I think. So it's a shame, really, that it's come to this and that we don't really seem to have much recourse as supporters. Even if you boycott the game, the powers that be don't really care because that seat is still going to be filled.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to ask Dan because me and Chris have season tickets, but for yourself, have you still got your season ticket? Because you live abroad now.
No, I my mum and dad both have season tickets, and one of them very kindly gives up their tickets when I go to a game usually.
But I mean, the point I was going to get at is that you've now got even less of a guarantee that you're going to be able to get a ticket for, like, if you decided in April that you wanted to come to one of the games there, and you're off work, you can fly home. You can't just go on the website and buy a ticket in the weeks leading up to it because they'll have been on general sale a lot earlier.
It's quite annoying and quite difficult to get tickets nowadays. Long gone are the days when Stuart Pearce was in charge and you could walk up and pay on the gate, you know, on the day, and there'd be still thousands of empty seats in the stadium. It's just, you know, I've been to see my physiotherapist today here in Germany, and he was telling me about how Erling Haaland, I really want to go to a Manchester City game so I can see him play in the flesh. Like, we've got that calibre of player now, that kind of superstar player that's kind of worth the admission fee on his own, that people who aren't even City fans will be going to the stadium to watch. So we've never been more popular.
What did you say? Well, his link-up play isn't that good. He needs to improve.
I said, I think you'll find he's crap, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
It seems to have been, like we've said, the void that's been left by perhaps the people that would have initially bought those tickets has been easily filled by people, perhaps, you know, who wouldn't have ordinarily got them. But if one thing has come out of it, in terms of it being a successful boycott, we've made a point. They did move the kickoff time, although not as much as we would have liked, i.e. to a Saturday at a reasonable time. The club also, in response to the boycott, because, you know, a lot of people were saying they weren't going to do it and it didn't sell out straight away, the club changed the criteria, didn't they, so people could buy multiple tickets, because there was a bit of aggro online where people were saying, oh, you shouldn't go, you should stand with the people who are trying to make the point and boycott it. And people who were going were saying, well, they've made it now, so I can buy, was it four tickets? One person could buy
four tickets.
Which is very much in response to try and make it sell out in response to the boycott. And the reason that has worked is because people were able to do that, whereas they previously wouldn't have been able to take the whole family who have maybe never been to Wembley before. So at least it's made the club make some changes. It's going to be an incremental thing, isn't it? You're not going to create wholesale changes overnight. They were talking in the audio there about clubs in Germany campaigning to get rid of Monday night games. And we're now this season going to have games kicking off at 7 o'clock on a Sunday. I mean, that is just... That is just wrong. That's just disruptive to people's lives. It's just not on that. Do you know what I mean? If I'm trying to get ready for the working week and I'm just popping out for 3 hours, you know, round trip or whatever it is, at least to go and see City, and then I'm getting home at like 10:30 and like, what? It's just...
No one's forcing you to go, Chris.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is it. This is the sort of argument you're going to get, this sort of banal, like, ridiculous responses from the tribal elements. And
the worst of that is we don't even know, like, I can't tell you the last time that the TV fixtures were announced on time as well. It's usually that there's a deadline for which they're supposed to tell fans when the games are going to be. And I think pretty much every single one of them the last few years has been missed. So it makes it harder and harder and harder to plan your time and your adult life. Because like we all have adult lives, we all have like things we have to do. It just makes it really difficult to plan around when you're going to go and watch the football.
Well, we certainly know where we stand, don't we?
Yeah. And that brings us to an end for our first Blue Moon podcast of the new season. The Patreon bonus shows will start again from Monday as we gear up for the brand new campaign. Thank you very much for listening this week. And thank you also to my guests, Dan Burke.
Always a pleasure.
And Chris Higginbottom.
A pleasure again. Yes, thank you.
We will see you next week. Take care.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.